keeping you informed, up to date, and entertained. It's Dennis Kay.
It is indeed. And the program is Fusion. Fusion being the program about prog rock, where music is a mixture of blues, rock, folk, classical, the works. The best musicians and the best albums. Talking of the best musicians, well, I've got a rock god with me at the moment on the line, and I'm so pleased to be able to talk to him. 2 years ago, I talked to him, had a great chat, and it's so nice to welcome him back today. Good evening, Greg Lake.
Hi, Jimmy. How are you doing?
Hello, Greg. It's Dennis Kay here. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And it's nice to have you back on board here at Priory FM in Grantham, Lincolnshire. And you've been sort of in the twilight a little bit since the last time I spoke to you. You were just off the back of a tour when I last spoke to you. What's been happening the last couple of years, Greg?
Well, all kinds of things, really. You know, too numerous to recount to you. But I've got all kinds of things on the go, really. Songwriting, I'm doing some performances with... I'm just off, actually, right now to do some work in America with a band called Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Ah, now, I do know a little bit about this, because you did perform with them sometime last year, if I remember right, Greg.
It's a fascinating band, really. It's a sort of concept. That's a progressive music concept that these two guys got together. This was 10 years ago. They decided to do a sort of progressive rock Christmas show, and they took it to all the promoters in America, and the promoters said, well, that's just a terrible idea. You know, it sounded like a non-commercial idea. And what happened was one of the promoters was a friend of theirs, and they managed to bully him into doing a show, a small show, in Cleveland, and they played this little 1,800-seater theater. And one way or another, they managed to sell it out. And so it came to the next year, and they said, well, you know, we want to do it again. And the promoter said, oh, no, we only just got away with it last year. But anyway, they persuaded him to do it. The first house went absolutely clean, quickly, in a day or two. And they put on a second show. And from there it grew, and now they're doing 60,000 seats a night.
Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic.
It's unbelievable. And it's a bit like Cirque du Soleil, you know, it's a massive production. There's 50 people on stage, and it's a huge thing. And anyway, I go on as a guest, and it's lovely. They're really lovely people. It's a wonderful thing. They only play between November, the end of November, and the end of December.
Brilliant. And am I right in thinking that you're actually playing somewhere New Year's Day?
Yeah, well, not New Year's Day, but New Year's Eve.
Oh, it's New Year's Eve, actually. That's going to be a great way to bring in the new year.
Well, yeah, it's fun, you know, and they're fun. And they have just the very best musicians in America, tremendous players. And so it's just a sort of festive thing. They play a lot of classical music. It's kind of a mix, really, of music, but largely classical, classical rock, that kind of thing. But the public really took to it. And as I say, it's become a kind of a sort of institution now in the States. You know, as I said, they do 60,000 seats a night. It's unbelievable.
Oh, that sounds absolutely fantastic, Greg. Talking of an institution, this time of year, obviously, we hear your brilliant song, I Believe in Father Christmas. It's always a favourite of mine, and I think all fans of Greg Lake and Emerson, Lake and Palmer as well. Do you still get that kick out of it when you hear it played on the radio every year?
Dennis, it's hard to really say that. I mean, it becomes... Yeah, yes, I suppose I do. I mean, I think, you see, it's a strange thing. I got mixed feelings about Christmas, you know. Christmas, because what Christmas has become, I don't really like, you know. But what I believe Christmas should be, I think is important. So I have sort of mixed feelings about it. You know, I suppose at the bottom of it is I still have this sort of lingering attachment to my childhood Christmas, when things were very much about the atmosphere, giving, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to all men, that sort of dropping of the guard, that, you know, even if you had a beef with someone, you'd forget it at Christmas. That kind of feeling, I think, is something that I wish was still here. I think it was a great sort of purging time. And I suppose that if anything, when I hear my song, that's what I kind of associate with, is my childhood.
Mm.
And in that way, I feel good about it. But, I mean, as a record, you know, as a record, I've heard it 100 times.
Yeah, of course. But it's still popular. And, yeah, I totally agree with you on that as regards Christmas. I don't know if it's just because as you get older, you see it from a different angle, but it has got so commercialised and it tends to lose that feeling that you had as a youngster, doesn't it? And
the worst thing for me about it is, you know, because the record, my record, became a hit, and it was never really intended to be a single. And in a way, I joined in with the very thing that I was protesting against.
Really?
If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, because it became a hit record, it then became a sort of almost a commercial concept. And it was really the very thing that I was trying to sort of buffer against. I mean, and I suppose that's really why I've got mixed feelings about it. Yeah, that's really what I feel is, you know, I'm sort of, especially now I get older, I really am more in tune with the more fundamental things about the old Christmas.
Yeah,
well, I think people should really, and I do it in my own family. I'm trying to rediscover the old Christmas. You know, like, making sure the old lady down the road is all right, that someone's going round to see her. And, you know, it's not about money so much or about gifts, but it's about goodwill. It's about inviting your friends round or somebody that you haven't seen for a while. That sort of social joining together, I think, is very important.
You're a very caring guy. I remember from talking to you a couple of years ago, a lot of things you take to heart, don't you? You've seen a lot as you've travelled the world, and I think you do actually get sort of emotionally involved with some of the things that you've seen over the years, haven't you?
Inevitably you do, one does, and as we all do, and I suppose age is a factor too, you know, you get very reflective as you get older, but as a musician and someone who's done as much travelling as I have, and has been in as many extraordinary circumstances, I suppose you have a very broad perspective on life, you know, and you see people from all kinds of angles, you know. And I think at the end of the day, you see that my perception of the world is that all people are essentially the same. You know, if you take a baby born in Russia, or anywhere, and you bring them up in a nice house, they're going to be a loving family, they're going to be a good person. You know, if you take a baby from somewhere and you bring them up in a hostile house full of, you know, hatred and drug addiction or something, they're going to turn out to be a bad person. You know, so people to me, audiences I found much the same. And so that's one thing, is you learn that human beings really aren't that different. We all more or less are the same. And once you accept that, you know, and you accept that you know, often you'll go in the street and you'll see somebody, if somebody's rude to you or nasty, you know, your immediate reaction is, you know, bastard, you know. But in truth, you don't know what that person's suffering. You don't know what they're going through. And it's all too easy just to take quickly on face value things. And I think now I'm older, I kind of look behind that curtain and say, perhaps that person's got a lot of troubles, and I don't react that quickly anymore to things, you know.
Sure, but you can tell just from what you're saying now, there's feeling there, definitely feeling, Greg, and that's something that I noticed even, you know, from as a fan of yours, when I came to see you in concert a couple of years ago, you took the time to come down and meet the fans and chat to them, and it wasn't as though it was a duty that you had to. You really enjoyed doing that, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, the people who followed me through my career are very precious. apart from that, that they have kept me in business, you know, they've kept me playing music and they've enabled me to live this life. They've also, in a way, guided me and taught me things that I wouldn't have known. I mean, the audience is like a mirror. It's rather like a mirror. You're playing into a mirror and it tells you so much about, you know, what they like, what they don't like, you know, and how they feel. And they teach you a lot about life. I've been taught more about life by fans and talking to fans than almost by any other source that I can think of. Because it is an emotional exchange. Music is an emotional exchange. And when you meet someone who's a fan, they talk about it in a very self-effacing and honest, open way. And so that's one of the ways that the music penetrated their soul in a very in a very easy way, without resistance. And so when they talk back to me anyway, it's as though it's a mirror in some sense.
That's brilliant.
But with the imprint of their own personality and their own, you know, their own input on it. And so, and that's the way I learn a lot, I think, from fans writing into the website and all of that kind of thing. That's one of the wonders of the internet, is you, before the internet, one very rarely, unless you met someone in person, you very rarely got much feedback. But now, of course, you know, I could go on my website and read all the things that people say.
That is the miracle of the modern age, isn't it, Greg? And, I mean, you mentioned the internet. Word got out about our programme tonight. I don't know how, but it's got out, and we've had emails coming in. I've got a couple here that I want to mention to you, because your fans all over the world want to say hello to you. There's Sylvie from Montreal in Canada. She says she's a great fan of yours and a former member of your forum and a member of Ladies of the Lake, and she'd say, it'd be kind of me to say hello to you, Greg, and if you could say hello to Sylvie, I'm sure you're going to make her day in Montreal.
Sylvie, good evening. Hello to you. And I'd just like to say, I used to live in Montreal for a while.
Yeah.
During 1970... Oh, now my memory hurts. 1976, I believe, we formed the orchestra in Montreal. That's where we rehearsed it. And that's where that whole tour and that whole show was set up. And we spent about 3 months there.
Yes.
And wonderful city, you know, wonderful city. Strange city because, you know, it's half French, half English. But it is wonderful. And it is, on that side of the world, it's the sort of one bastion of Europe that there is, you know. This sort of European feel in Montreal is fantastic.
She also adds, actually, Greg, about the internet. She says it's amazing. And she said, just before you came on, I asked about sort of memories of prog rock. And she says that one of her most greatest memories is the ELP show at the Olympic Stadium in Montreal 30 years ago with the orchestra. Yeah. She says, I'm sure that Greg remembers it pretty well. And she says it's one of the greatest moments in prog music. And I totally agree with her there. Also, someone who's contacted us, Greg, let me just find the details, is Paul. Now, I've got Paul. He says, please say hi to Greg for me. Now, he says, I think it's either from or free on Warrior, and from all at Ladies of the Lake. Now, does that name mean anything to you, Greg, Warrior? I've got this name here, and it says cheers, and it's from Paul. So, the Ladies of the Lake, everybody there, and someone called Warrior, or Free on Warrior, if that's the right word, they'd like you just to say a big hello to them.
Well, hello to Warrior. Hello. No, I don't know Warrior, but, you know, there's so many people. It was my birthday the other day, and I got, I think, something like 2,200 messages.
Yeah.
Written in to my birth, and, you know, it took me 3 days to read them.
Brilliant. I put one on there.
Show you about, the strange thing about the internet is I don't know where it's going to end, because I try and answer a lot of them, you know.
Yeah.
Because some of them are really personal, very deep, and some of them are quite important too. Some of them, discuss issues where they really, really deserve and need an answer. And of course, you know, the more the people write in, the harder it is to answer. And also to know everyone. So you just have, sometimes you have to give, you know, quick responses, but I do try and respond to people.
That's really nice, Greg.
And I do appreciate people writing in. I tend to read them all, but I don't, obviously, you know, responding to people is...
Oh, it'd be a full-time job if you had to do that all the time.
I could sit here all day and do it. I could, yeah.
Great. Greg, I've got one more, and that comes here from Britain, up in Durham at the moment, from Fran, from Francis in Durham. And her question is, what are you getting the dogs for Christmas, Greg? Because you're a great dog lover, aren't you?
My dog... Well, I usually go down a pet shop. My dogs usually have a dog stocking, you know. That's what I usually get them.
You've got a... is it Dalmatians you keep?
I do. Well done, Dennis. You're very fresh. Very good memory.
Oh, not a lot.
I've got a Dalmatian, and I've also got a Scotty.
Yeah, and...
The Dalmatians are very strange dogs. They're just wonderful. They're different to most other dogs. They've got a strange personality, you know. They're always sort of second-guessing you. Wonderful.
Do they take after the film, then? 101 Dalmatians?
Yeah, if you watch the film, you pretty much know what Dalmatians are, yeah.
That sounds great. Greg, you've been out to lunch today, haven't you?
I did. I went out with Keith.
Yep, I was going to ask you who it was. Yeah, you've been out with Keith. Do you manage to get together very often?
Not so often. Keith lives in Los Angeles and I live here in London. So we don't go out that often, no. But now and again, we try and get together when we can.
And that's nice because we've heard stories in the past. If anyone who's been into ELP, that there have been stories in the press over the years about battles between bands, and I don't think this is just between ELP. This happens in all bands. But the one thing that has lasted is that you still respect each other, and you meet up, and you're friends. This is the nice thing about it.
I think there are battles in all bands. The question is. Are the battles between, you know, people about people, or are the battles about music? Keith and I always battled about music, you know. That was always at the root of, you know, any struggles we had were about the way we saw music.
Is it easy to keep a friendship when you are battling about music as well?
You know, I have to tell you, it's not so much a friendship as it is a family.
Yeah.
It's closer than a friendship. It's hard to describe to you, but when you spend that many years, day in, day out, day in, day out with someone, you live their life, you live with them through everything, absolutely everything. You become so close that it's no longer your mate or you've fallen out with your mate. You know, it is a family issue. And you truly become a family, and it's a strange thing. And I watch most of my contemporaries, all the bands that we all know, Led Zeppelin, The Who, Pink Floyd. You would have watched the other night on the TV, and you see them go through all of these struggles. And it's life. But you know the reason that it gets like that is because they become so close. It isn't just your partner at work, or it isn't, you know, you really do become a very close family. And sometimes it can, right, I suppose rather like a marriage, it can lead to a divorce. And other times it leads to disagreements. But it depends on the nature of the disagreement. As I said, Keith and I have often fallen out, but it was always about the art, about the music, about how he saw it, about how I saw it. And we would struggle each for our own interpretation of that, I suppose.
But
at different points in history, we've been more or less willing to compromise.
Sure.
And that's really it. But that's why we still, you know, I mean, I spent most of the lunch today with Keith talking about our families.
Yeah.
We didn't talk much about music. It was most about, you know...
It's catching up with normal everyday issues, I suppose.
Yeah.
Oh, that must be nice. Really great. And, I mean, over the years with both Keith and Carl Palmer as well, you know, you must have bonded so well, but there must have been times when you, because you had such a heavy schedule. Was it... Did it get to the point, and I'm trying to imagine myself in your position, and not just you, but any one of you three on the road, where it got so tiring that, you know, you wanted to just give up and come home?
It got to all sorts of points. You know, the life... I would refer especially to the... between 1970 and 1980. Every day was extraordinary. Extraordinary. I mean, you mentioned the other day the Olympic Stadium in Montreal. That was just one night. You know, every night was like that. Every night was chaos. Every night was intense. The demands were intense. The actual physical drain upon you, upon all three of us, was always intense because we gave everything we had. I mean... people never saw us after the show. It's a shame because if you saw ELP after the show, you were just looking at three wrecked individuals.
Yeah, physically so demanding, wasn't it?
Dripping in sweat, couldn't even speak. You know, 10 minutes, just silence. You would go into our dressing room and there would be just silence and people dripping in sweat because they'd given absolutely every ounce of physical or mental energy, and it would take 10 or 15 minutes just to become normal. That wasn't, you know, and then you live the daytime, and the daytime was always full of, you know, getting up quite early usually, and jetting off to the next city. As soon as you touch down, it's, you know, this reception, that radio station, go along to the TV, blah, 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 you know, off to the gig, do the sound check. You've got an hour to sit around and get bored, or 2 hours to get bored, you know, before the show. Then the show starts, and it's madness for 2.5 hours, in which time you wreck yourself, and then off you come, and you sit in the dressing room and kind of recover, stunned, and then in the limo to the hotel room, bang, the door shuts, you're alone.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Happens every day, day in, day out, 200 days a year. And it's a strange life because, in a way, it's very, very isolated.
Yeah, I can imagine
it's
so.
It's not very social. A lot of people think rock and roll is a sort of huge partying, you know, everybody going crazy and it's all parties and the girls. But really, in reality, there's a lot of solitude.
And there's only so much that a person can take, isn't there? Because you've got to have that resolve just to carry on. It's physically and mentally draining, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I can imagine.
You know. And then the touring would stop, and that you'd maybe have a week or even 2 weeks off. Then it would be straight in the studio, and there'd be a whole load of other demands, you know. And this is the thing about a musician or an entertainer's life in general, is that you're only as good as your last hit.
Sure.
And so, you know, the moment you stop, it is, well, now what? You know, now what have you got to offer?
What about your creative expression, Greg? Did you have pressure from the record companies? Because a lot of your music comes from the heart, but did you feel pressure from the record companies to try and keep producing?
It's a sort of yes and no answer. On the one hand, yes, because... there was always this sort of tacit, expectation that you, essentially it's just what I've said, they expected us to come up with another great record soon.
Yeah.
Now, you know, although ELP there was some, I mean, Keith is an extraordinarily talented musical writer. And player, unbelievably talented, you know. And I suppose in our own way, each of us had a gift for creating. But even so, you know, you finish a tour and your knees are trembling from exhaustion. You take this couple of weeks off, but really deep down, your soul doesn't heal. You've had this battering, you know, this exposure in a way so, that's so extreme that you, like, rather like a snail, you go inside the shell. And 2 weeks holiday doesn't really cure it, you know.
It takes a long while to get over,
it
I can imagine.
And then you come out and it's, well, it's time for the next record.
Sure, I can
and
imagine.
And the question before you've even thought about anything, before you've had time to pay your council tax, is, what have you written then? What have you got, you know? And it starts all over again.
I can imagine, it must be tense.
And you're always behind, you know, behind schedule, because the expectations exceed the reality.
You're always chasing, basically.
And I suppose that's where the extraordinary bands really were able to deliver. You know, they were able to overcome that.
What's your view on, well, present-day circumstances, actually? I mean, only this week, Led Zeppelin have got back together. Do you think it's the right thing for bands to do?
Hang on.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I thought we'd lost you there,
yes,
Greg.
Yes, I do. In the sense that I think, yes, I do. Yeah, I do. It is a broad answer, I do.
Because, I mean, the O2 Arena, from what I can gather, was absolutely packed the other night. I mean, you obviously know the guys from Led Zepp, and you know what the atmosphere would have been like for them. You've done reunions with Keith and Carl in the past, and you know what that feeling's like, and it must still give them a buzz now, coming back on stage after all these years.
Well, funnily enough, I work with Robert every year, because we do this Teenage Cancer Trust show together. Myself and Robert, Roger Daltrey, with Richard Desmond, who owns the Express and OK magazine. And we do the Cancer Trust concerts together. And, all I can say is, rather like ELP, Led Zeppelin went through this difficult period where, they had this extraordinary success. I think, to be honest, too much stress, too many demands, you know, and it just wasted them as individuals temporarily, albeit temporarily. But and so, you know, again, as I say, they recoiled. They recoiled, I think, is the best way to describe it. And it's just a matter of how long it takes to come out of that shock. And to be able to go back in and see what you've done and see what you've created and come to the rational view that why not play it? Why not give people pleasure and play it again? Why not?
This is very similar to
I mean, they don't need the money. It's not a financial thing at all. But the question is, I think philosophically, Jimmy and Robert came to the view that in this case, what happened, there was Armut Ertegun, the man who was the president of Atlantic Records. He died, and there was a trust that he was running, and there was a concert put together for that. So that was the sort of motivation for them coming together. But I suspect that with or without that, they would have probably at some point reached the conclusion that Led Zeppelin, the creative power of Led Zeppelin, was something that was worth celebrating and was worth revisiting. And I'm glad they did it. I wasn't there. Keith, funnily enough, did play on the show.
Great, I didn't know that.
He played on it. But I'm glad they did it, and I hope they continue to do it. So as a sort of general answer to your question, I think it's good when bands can reform and do that, that it's a good thing. I don't see how it can be bad, really.
No, and it must be good to get back together. Like you say, all these different bands, they're all like families, aren't they, when they've been together for so long, so it must be a great feeling to...
The only thing, I suppose, it's a question of expectations. It depends what someone expects to see, because, in a way, you're not going to be the same as you were 20 years ago.
No, I can well understand that. And I suppose the fans in some way demand it that you are, but in some other ways, the fans have also grown with you, haven't they? Although you've got a new audience coming through as well, because like at your concerts recently, a couple of years ago, I was bowled over by the music anyway, because I've followed you for all these years. But age groups, you know, the age groups that were there was a very mixed age group, and they were all enjoying your stuff, weren't they, Greg?
It is. I suppose you do. You know, it's hard for me to say. I think you do get. You tend to get. What happens actually is you tend to get the children of the mothers and the fathers that, you know, were into the band way back then. Do bring their kids along, actually. And then some young people come, particularly musicians, who are, as we all do, you look back to your, the people who you admired as a young musician. You know, for me it was Elvis, for me it was, you know, Little Richard, people like this. But, for young kids today, it was ELP. It was Led Zeppelin. So they tend to come along and see you, you know.
And then really, when they come along and see it, they're passing it down their to the next generation, aren't they? Which is great.
In a way, it goes on.
Well, that's the history.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
There is a lineage in music. And I think the interesting thing about not only progressive music, but particularly progressive music, but not only progressive music, but the whole of the sort of technological age of music, 20th century music, was that it was a new way of expressing music with electronics.
Sure, you got the latest technology there. Do you think now music has changed to the point where that expression isn't there as much, or is it just a different method of doing the same sort of thing?
I think the question of expression is a cultural question. It's not so much now, we're not talking about the facilities or the way to make music technologically, but you're talking about the will or the cultural reasons, motivation behind making music. And I think today there is not any real motivating force in music. There is no cultural motivation behind making music. When was the last time you heard a song, for example, that had the significance or meaning or pathos of a song? I take the greatest example I can think of, which is Imagine by John Lennon.
Oh, yeah, beautiful song, and it's got so much feeling.
I mean,
that is
a song that meant something. You know, it really meant something. Or, I hate to dwell on the Beatles, but unfortunately, they did have a lot of them. The other one was All You Need Is Love.
Yeah.
What a phenomenal thought. It sounds passé today, maybe a little, you know, but an incredible thought that really the cure for all of the world's ills all summed up in one short song title. All You Need Is Love. Fantastic thought.
Very true as well, Greg.
Fantastic thought.
Absolutely brilliant.
Imagine there's no countries. I wonder if you can. These are profound thoughts, and they came from a cultural motivation. Today, I don't see the cultural motivation. You know, there's a lot of protest. There's a lot of bollocks being talked about, rap music, But really, I can't think of one title or one song that sticks in my mind that really says anything, to me anyway, that's meaningful.
Mm, true.
There are a lot of attractive songs, but you know what? I would expect there would be. After 30 or 40 years of great rock and roll writing, I would expect someone to be able to draw on that resource of inspiration and come up with, you know, a variation. That's not hard.
No. Greg, I'd love to carry on. We were supposed to do half an hour, and we're doing a bit more. I'm on till midnight. Are you free? We'll stay on.
It's an interesting subject.
It is. I mean, it's fascinating. I'm sure the listeners are loving this.
Yeah.
Absolutely loving it. And I'm so grateful for you coming on and chatting to us. Hopefully, it won't be the last time. By the way, Greg, just to let you know, this little station here in Grantham, Lincolnshire, a totally sort of independent community radio station run by volunteers, we're putting in for a full-time license to run a full-time community radio station. And if we get on the air full-time, I'd love to be able to call you sometime. And especially if you're on the road or something like that, and have maybe once I don't know, two or three times a year, the diary of a rock god. If you're ever free to do something like that, I'd love to chat to you.
I am not a rock god.
In a lot of people's opinion, you are.
But it's great to chat, and especially it's a lovely way to reach people on a very personal and one-to-one level, and for that reason I'm happy to do it.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant, Greg, and I hope we'll be able to do this again sometime soon. Just before we finish off, so what's for the future for Greg Lake, and have you anything in mind that you fancy doing?
Well, there are a lot of things actually currently being discussed, and I'm not at liberty, as they say, to reveal anything right now.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I'd like to, but it would be wrong. And but I think very shortly there will be probably some announcements which will cheer people up. And when they come, you will be the first to know.
Oh, thank you, Greg. I'll tell you what, Greg, if you just happen to be performing with some friends somewhere, and you want somebody to stand at the front and say, "Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends," I'll certainly do it for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And from everyone in Grantham and all your fans who have been listening in on the internet and all over the place, I'd like to wish you a very Merry Christmas, and I hope it's not too long before we talk again.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, man.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Good night and God bless to you.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.